I'm Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
We're going to cut in really quick to National Native News to remind you guys that coming up in about 3 minutes, we will have the Republican candidate for governor, Mike Donlavey, on the air to talk about the upcoming election. It's on Tuesday. Make sure you get out and vote. And we're going to hear his stance on a number of things, primarily education and fisheries are what we'll be talking about. And then today at 11, we'll have the independent candidate for the U.S. House of Representatives, Elise Galvin, and she's running up a tight race against Don Young. She'll be on the air at 11 o'clock. We have not heard anything from Don Young's campaign recently that they would like to get on the air. We are trying to see. We are asking them to come on the air, but it sounds like he doesn't have the time for it, sadly. But we'll see if we can get Mr. Young on the air to talk about his view on some issues. So stay tuned for that hopeful interview to come. Again, Mike Donlavey, the Republican governor candidate, coming up in 2 minutes on KSDP.
Native America Calling is produced in the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico, by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation, a Native nonprofit media organization. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service. Music is by Brent Michael Davids. Native Voice 1, the Native American Radio Network.
Programming on KSDP is supported by the Shumagin Corporation. Located in Sandpoint, the Shumagin family of businesses includes property and equity management, the Sandpoint Tavern, and the Anchor Inn Motel. The Shumagin Corporation, serving its shareholders and the people of Sandpoint, on the web at www.shumagin.com or by telephone at 907-383-3525. The Shumagin Corporation, hometown values and service, a proud sponsor of KSDP.
Good morning. You're tuned in to 8:30 a.m. KSDP, 88.1 FM in King Cove, Alaska. We are on the air right now with Mike Donlavey. He is the Republican candidate for governor. He's running in the election coming up on Tuesday, 4 days away. Make sure you get out there and vote. We had an interview with Mr. Donlavey before, and this is our follow-up, and we're so thankful for your time, Mr. Donlavey. Thank you for coming on the air.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So you were a former senator for the state of Alaska, served up until about 2014, 2015, if I'm not mistaken?
Served up until January of this year, actually. I left January 15th to run for governor.
Okay. And before that, you were a superintendent and a principal and a teacher on the slope, so no stranger to bush communities. And before that, you even spent some time in Southeast. Was it doing logging?
Yeah, I worked in a logging camp. I actually worked in the shop.
Okay, so no stranger to Alaska, all across the state. So we wanted to take some time and ask you a few more questions, specifically stuff that pertains to out here in the Aleutians East Borough. So thanks for the time. I want to open up, just give you a chance to say the race is coming to a close very soon here. What are the main points that you're trying to bring home as we get closer to the ballot box on Tuesday?
Thanks for asking. So I believe in the promise of Alaska, meaning I believe that with all the resources that we have, everything from fish to gold to timber, which we are not utilizing, to oil and gas, rare earths and beyond, I think we have incredible opportunities here in Alaska to be able to provide for more jobs, more investment, create new wealth and new revenue for the state of Alaska. I believe that we do this by managing what we have well, instead of taxing for more of it. In other words, currently what we have going on in government, in my opinion, is some mismanagement, whether it's Medicaid, health and social services. I believe that we can manage our budgets better. I believe we can manage our government better. And I believe that we can drop potentially some barriers in permitting and studies and regulations to try and get more investment in the state of Alaska. So I think the difference between myself and my opponent, Mark Begich, is, you know, Mark believes in bigger budgets and more taxes. And Mark, I don't think believes in is resource development to the degree that I do. So there are differences, and I think this this election is going to decide which path, which fork in the road Alaska takes.
Yeah, that's, you know, there's been, I've noticed over the last several weeks that you are drawing a line between you and Mr. Begich on a number of issues. And I think you brought up the one that I've seen the most come up, whether it be from the debate of the state or recent press releases. And that's probably taxes, where I see this coming up multiple times. And you're drawing a very stark difference between you and Mr. Begich here. Now, are you getting to the point, because I feel like in the past you were a little bit more reserved about taxes, but now it seems like you're very much standing in opposition to them. Are you getting to a point where you'd say that you would, like George Bush Sr. did, no new taxes as a promise?
I'm getting to the point where I feel strongly that before we even think about taxes, before we even think about taking the permanent fund, we have to make a commitment, again, to manage the government better. We have funded but unfilled positions that in the tune of millions of dollars. We're overpaying providers in our Medicaid programs to the tune of over $100 million that we'll have to claw back. We've got studies, for example, fast rail studies from Palmer, Alaska to Anchorage in a time where we need more troopers and more prosecuting attorneys. So, you know, down the road, if we really manage our budgets well and we can demonstrate to the people of Alaska in an honest fashion that we need more revenue, we can have that conversation down the road, but I don't think we're anywhere near that at this stage of the game.
So the things that people probably would see the number one spending on, health and human services, of course, education, things like that. But, you know, out here in our communities, one of the main things that we experience is Department of Fish and Game. It means so much to us out here. It's really, you know, probably the department of government that we interact with almost more than any other. Now, the Department of Fish and Game, the Board of Fisheries, who do you see as being a good person to act as commissioner for the Department of Fish and Game? Right now, it's Sam Cotton, who has a lot of experience in the commercial fishery. Would you feel that someone in the commercial fishery or perhaps sports fishery, or what would you like to see happening for the department?
It's a very good question. We have to hire the best person we can, and what I'm doing is I'm asking groups. I've had meetings with commercial fish groups in Juneau and Kenai and all over, as well as sports fishing groups, to send me a profile. In other words, what should be the characteristics, the education, the experience, the view of fisheries? What should this person have in terms of a commissioner? Send me that profile. And then if you've got three or four names that you believe fit that profile, send those names to me separately. So I have a chance to look at what folks in the commercial fishing world, sports fishing world, subsistence fishing, what their thoughts are on this. And we're going to try and bring the groups together and come up with the best possible person that we can find to put in that position that's going to manage the fisheries based upon data and biology and try and keep as much of the politics out of it as possible.
It's a noble ambition. I wish, you know, whoever the best of luck with this, because it's obviously a long-standing and very contentious area. You know, speaking of politics with fishing, I was curious to ask you, and we had some people want to know, how do you feel about the urban fishery propositions that came up recently? And, you know, urban's kind of a loose term, but, you know, they were trying to shut down the gillnet fishery on the Kenai Peninsula, and it was a move within sports industry and subsistence industries. Do you feel like those are policies that need to be considered, or do you feel like there's room for both to exist on places like the Kenai? What would be your position on a proposition to close down a fishery?
I think that proposition was a reaction to poor management and frustration on the part of one group over another. And that's the problem. We've got to make sure that all the groups are included in these discussions. And again, I think if we get the right people for commissioner, right people on the Fish and Game Board, and for you guys out there, the North Pacific Fishery Commission as well, we have to get the right individual on that board. And I know that there's a seat that'll be coming up in my first year here, as governor. And so that's another seat that I'm looking forward to getting input from folks in your neck of the woods and other commercial fishermen in terms of who would be the best pick. But I would say that initiative, I think, that you're referring to was a reaction of frustration, poor management. And it's going to be my goal, and I know it's not going to be easy, but it's going to be my goal to try and bring the groups together, try and work on these issues together as opposed to dividing Alaska.
Yeah. There's been an interesting push I've noticed recently on the national and international scale, really, for fisheries and specific seafood in particular. That is, of course, the idea of tariffs and the recent actions that has happened between United States and Chinese relations. And tariffs for seafood in Alaska would have been a very big deal. Now, would you, as governor, would you feel like that you would make a stand against anything that would propose a royalty or a tariff against Alaskan seafoods? You know, how would you advocate for the state in that area if you were governor?
I'd certainly make my position known that such a tariff is going to be damaging to our commercial fisheries. I'd also look forward to having discussions with the federal government to see if there's other alternatives to where our fish can go to be processed. For example, we send fish over to China, as we know, to be processed, and it comes back here. Maybe we can work a little harder, maybe become a little more creative as to how we can do our processing here in the state of Alaska, because if we're sending our fish over there to be processed, to be sold back here in the United States, seems like it would make sense to try and figure out a way to process it here in Alaska so we don't have to deal with the tariff issues. And so these are discussions. I'm no expert on commercial fisheries, but I'm certainly going to surround myself with some of the best people that there are related to commercial fisheries. And this is certainly a topic that I think we need to have a discussion on. How can we provide value added to our fisheries here in the state of Alaska so we don't have to deal with these tariff issues overseas?
Well, I appreciate your answer on that, Mr. Donlevy. Thank you very much. You want to shift away from fisheries now to another area of interest for our community in particular, and this is many areas. You know, out here in the Aleutians East Borough, we're a small school district, and we have some school districts that are, you know, or some schools, I should say, that are within the range of 10 schools or 10 students, sometimes less than 10 or up and down between that area to between 10 and 20 students. And then we have a couple schools that are well within the range of what's, you know, state funded levels. What are your views about these small schools? How do you feel the state should fund? Do you think that the 10 student level is a good level for students, or what would you like to see for education funding? And I know that you've talked about accountability, and oftentimes accountability becomes a loaded idea in the world of education and is tied to test scores. What's your vision for accountability when it comes to education? Because I've noticed you use that term lately with in terms to how we would fund education here in Alaska.
Yeah, very good question. And what I mean, the term I use more often is outcome. And so what we need to ensure that every child has the right to a free, appropriate public education in which the outcomes that we would expect for any child anywhere in this country, but especially anywhere in the state, the standards, for example, in reading, mathematics, career tech, these are the areas of focus. I would hope that we could have a discussion to make sure that all children have a system that provides that opportunity. I know there's been some, I think, misunderstanding. I'm not going to say mischaracterization, but misunderstanding that I want to shut down schools in small communities. That's not the case. I spent 19 years in rural Alaska working in schools in small communities. What I want to do is make sure that these small schools are able to provide an opportunity for their students to be able to excel in reading, mathematics, and career tech. If for high schoolers, for example, they may be in a one- or two-teacher school that basically can't teach a physics or physics lab, biology, chemistry, those sort of courses, higher-end mathematics because of just the small scale numbers, what I propose is working with school districts, to, especially in the hub areas, to get some dorms. Housing for students so that they can go to those hub areas, take those courses on a term. In other words, maybe a four-week intensive course in physics or chemistry, internet, coding, you name it. And then once they complete that term, they can go back to their small schools and continue with their regular curriculum. There's a mischaracterization that I want to shut schools down. What I want to do is try and provide more opportunities in these hub areas where students close by in small high schools that don't have the opportunity. And I'm not looking at a number to shut down schools. You mentioned 10 or 15 or 20. That's not a discussion that I'm going to have. My discussion is how can we help school districts, for example, with possibly insurance or accounting practices or purchasing or a communal or consortium warehouse where smaller districts can combine resources to purchase curriculum materials, et cetera. I want to have those discussions with the school districts. This is not an issue of forcing anything on school districts, just having a discussion on ideas on how we could possibly be more efficient so we can drive those savings back into the classroom, hire more teachers, hire more specialists.
I appreciate your clarification on that. You know, it has been a big issue and a big conversation topic over the last several weeks. I want to kind of dive in a little bit deeper about the idea of outcomes. Now, you know, and I know you know the lingo very well, but when you talk about accountability and you talk about outcomes and things like that, do you feel that you would like to see a results-based, like, you know, George Bush Jr., he brought No Child Left Behind. That was the idea of having outcomes meet a certain level to receive funding or certain levels of funding and whatnot. And do you see that Alaska needs to have that kind of outcome-based payout for funding? And, you know, it'd be difficult, like, if a community like Sam, and if so, how would you help communities that were not achieving that level?
Yeah, No Child Left Behind that came into existence in January 2001, in my opinion, was heavy-handed and really, really, really heavy on regulation. It was incredibly scripted. I think it handcuffed the hands of teachers. So, no, that's not something I'm talking about. What I'm referring to is when we assess a student in third grade, and if they're reading, and we should be assessing them first, second, as we move into third grade, if their reading level is not to the standards that research believes a child at the age of 8, which is usually third grade, should be reading at, then we should get that child help. So that doesn't mean taking money away. That actually means possibly providing more resources to that child. We've got some islands of brilliance in the state of Alaska in terms of specific schools and some school districts that their students seem to be performing very well for a whole host of reasons. Conversely, we've got some school districts and some schools in which the children are not achieving well. We need to take a look at that and find out why. And usually it's a resource issue, a focus issue. There may be other distractions that we have to work on. So my goal is to help the child become a better reader, become better in mathematics, especially algebra by the time they get into ninth grade, and work on some career tech for kids because we are pretty much a blue-collar state. This doesn't mean we add more regulations. In some cases, this might mean we reduce regulations, especially for those schools that are performing, and shift resources to those schools or those classes that need more help.
You know, I'm going to throw you a curveball here, Mr. Begich, or not Mr. Begich, sorry about that, Mr. Donlevy. I'm going to throw you a curveball. We just had Mark Begich on the air just earlier, so I'm so sorry about that. But we are going to throw you a curveball here. I'm going to ask you, what would you feel about a school district who was saying that, you know, the cultural standards that are being handed to them from the state or federal levels don't line up with their culture? And, you know, and they would use the term like, you know, a colonialistic view or something like that. Do you feel like that the state should support schools that want to push forward on cultural issues and maybe don't want to be held to a standard that they don't view as relevant for their community?
I think that's a discussion worth having, meaning I think what some of those schools or some of those folks may be saying is that the schools are acting as in the guise of an assimilation instrument. In other words, trying to assimilate especially our native cultures, into the major mainstream culture. And sometimes that's been done historically forcibly. I believe in local control, and I believe local schools and school districts should help determine the outcomes that they want to have for their kids. But what I'm saying is if you have a school district and you're teaching reading, and we all believe that reading is a gatekeeper skill for everything else, that should be a minimum. Whether you believe that the culture of the local community should be emphasized or not, reading skills, reading outcomes, reading results, I think, should be a part of any school, regardless of whether, again, a school or a group believes that the cultural appropriate standards should be in place in that school. I don't think they're mutually exclusive. I think you could have a school that emphasizes the culture of the area, but at the same time is also emphasizing the fact that kids should be able to read so they can live in any world, any town, any community that they want to live in.
Well, I appreciate you answering that. I know that's a very tough question to answer, but out here in Alaska, that's not a theoretical question that, you know, you read about in university. That, you know, with our Native communities, that's a real deal question for some places. So I appreciate you giving that answer.
And then just a follow up, you may recall that I did spend 19 years in rural Alaska in Native communities, and that my wife of 31 years is Alaska Native. So I understand exactly what you're saying.
Yeah. No, these are tough issues, and there's never easy answers. Well, we're getting close to, I know you got, you know, it's so close to the election, your time is limited, but I can't thank you enough for coming on the air. I want to ask you one last question about something that really affects these small rural communities, and then give you a chance to give your closing statement. But, you know, things like energy assistance, tribal support for things like APIA and other services, Native organizations that provide, you know, food opportunities, even welfare opportunities out here, like energy assistance, are very big deals. How do you feel about these services that really assist rural communities? Even, I believe, is it COPA that is the one that offers the cost of power adjustment to help keep us in line with the urban communities? Do you think these are programs that are well suited for our government right now?
So, PCE, power cost equalization, I think is what you're referring to. And, you know, the bottom line is this. Those communities, those areas, those states that have affordable energy are the communities and states that are viable and are states, communities, villages that will grow. And so certainly I want to have a deep discussion on how we can ensure that especially our rural communities are energy self-sufficient. We've done a pretty good job in places like Kodiak in southeast Alaska when it comes to hydropower. Many of those communities have become independent, self-sufficient, and have low power costs. I want to continue that discussion on how we can help other small communities, especially our rural, isolated communities, our villages. How can we help them become more self-sufficient when it comes to energy? Because being dependent upon diesel, high cost, it's going to eat up not just the budgets of the state of Alaska, but local community residents, too, that are paying for this energy. So I am absolutely focused on coming up with ways to reduce the cost of energy for communities across Alaska, including our rural areas.
Well, I appreciate that. Well, Mr. Don Levy, and did I pass the name test? How are we doing?
We're doing good.
Okay, great. Thank you. Closing statements. Just the last thing you'd like to say here to the people in the Aleutians Eastboro before we go out on Tuesday and vote.
You matter. You won't be forgotten. And I know sometimes folks in rural Alaska, especially the further you are away from the urban areas, you think that your vote doesn't matter, your voice doesn't matter, nobody cares. I lived in rural Alaska for 19 years. My wife and her family are from rural Alaska. My friends are from rural Alaska. You do matter, and you will matter in my administration. And I look forward to working with folks in rural Alaska out in your neck of the woods. And I would ask that you remember to vote. And vote. Early voting started already, and you want to make sure that you have an opportunity to vote by Tuesday. I would ask respectfully for your vote. And getting a governor like myself, somebody who understands, appreciates, and respects rural Alaska, I think it'll be a good thing for the folks out in your area and your region.
I appreciate your time today and for giving us a chance to kind of dive in a little bit deeper. And I appreciate your willingness to answer some hard questions, Mr. Don Levy. We really do appreciate that very much.
Thanks for having me.
All right. We will talk to you again soon. And good luck on Tuesday, of course. Thank you very much for your time and have a great day.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Goodbye. That was Mike Donlevy. He is going to be running for governor. He is running for governor, I should say, and you can go out and vote on Tuesday. He's in a very tight race right now with Mark Begich, the Democratic candidate for governor. We just had him on the air yesterday and had a great opportunity to talk with him on issues pertaining to the Aleutians Eastboro. If you missed any of this interview, you want to listen to it again, please tune in to apradio.org. And listen to the interview there again. We covered so many topics from fishing game to fisheries, education, power cost equalization. So many great topics were covered today, and I'm very thankful for the chance we have to talk to these people about these issues. Also, tomorrow we are going to have our annual members meeting. Due to weather, we did not get the pizzas in that we were trying to get in. They've been sitting in Anchorage for a number of days, sadly. So come on down, have yourself some food. I think we're going to get a little taco bar action going tomorrow at noon. So become a member, support KSDP, and just sit down and talk with us. Tell us what we could be doing differently, what you like, what you would like to see, and here are some of the ideas that we've got coming down the pipe. All right, thank you so much for tuning in. In 30 minutes, we will have Elise Galvin, the representative for the U.S. representative candidate for the independent group. She'll be on the air at 11. Here we go. More music next on KSDP.
KSDP Radio, 830 AM, Sandpoint, 88.1 FM on translator K201DA, King Cove, Alaska.
Programming on KSDP is supported by the Shumagin Corporation.